All right. Welcome back, everybody. We're diving into a deep dive today.
Ooh, a deep dive.
You know, I like that. Deep dive, deep dive.
I like it.
We're going deep. All right, so we're cracking open the good book today.
Okay.
1 Samuel chapters 13 and 14. We're going to unpack the story of King Saul.
All right.
Now, you might be thinking, another king? Another ancient story? So what?
Yeah.
But trust me on this one. This one's wild.
This is a wild one.
We're talking about a king fresh off a major victory who makes a chain of decisions that cost him his dynasty. And alongside him, we have his son, Jonathan, who is a true hero in this story.
Yes.
But his amazing feats get totally overshadowed by his father's drama.
Yeah. You know, it's almost Shakespearean the way that this unfolds. You've got this king, Saul.
Yeah.
At a crossroads, he's facing immense pressure, like a massive Philistine army on one side, his own men deserting on the other. It's just like a pressure cooker of a situation.
Okay, so set the scene for us a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
What is the first big misstep that Saul makes?
Well, Samuel the prophet, you know, he had given Saul very specific instructions to wait for him at Gilgal before offering a sacrifice to God. But, you know, as the hours tick by, Samuel is nowhere to be seen.
Uh-huh.
And you can almost feel Saul's anxiety rising. The Philistines are getting closer. His army is shrinking. And that pressure to act, to do something, it must have been overwhelming.
Yeah. You know, I can only imagine.
Yeah. So he takes matters into his own hands.
Exactly. Saul decides to offer the sacrifice himself, probably thinking, hey, I'm the king. I can handle this. This will secure God's favor.
Yeah.
We'll crush those Philistines.
Right.
But, you know, in ancient Israel, there was a clear division between the roles of a king and a priest.
Yeah.
The king was the military and political leader, whereas the priest was the spiritual intermediary between God and the people.
So by offering the sacrifice himself, Saul was like stepping out of his lane, so to speak. Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, it's not just about breaking a rule.
Yeah.
It's about a deeper understanding of obedience. Remember, in this context, kings were seen as God's representatives on earth.
Mm.
Their authority came directly from God.
Right.
And their obedience was a reflection of their relationship with God.
Yeah. So this seemingly small act has pretty massive consequences, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Samuel shows up just as the offering is finished.
Mm.
And let's just say he is not pleased. He lays down the law. Saul's disobedience has cost him his dynasty.
Yeah.
And when we say dynasty, we're not just talking about Saul's personal reign.
Right.
We're talking about a lineage of kings from his family, a whole future wiped out by this one act.
Wow. Imagine you're Saul in that moment.
Yeah.
You just won a battle. You're feeling pretty good about yourself. And then, boom, Samuel drops this bombshell. You know, your entire family line just lost the right to rule because you couldn't wait a few more hours.
Yeah.
That's got to sting a little bit.
Yeah. It's a stark reminder, I think, that in this world, true leadership wasn't just about military prowess or political savvy. It was about aligning yourself with God's will.
Yes.
Even when it was difficult.
Yeah.
Even when it didn't make sense from a human perspective.
So Saul's dynasty is over, but the story doesn't end there, right?
Not even close, because then Samuel drops another bombshell.
Okay, what's the bombshell?
He reveals that God has already chosen a new leader, a man after his own heart.
Ooh.
Talk about a cliffhanger, right?
Yeah, it leaves us wondering, who is this mysterious chosen one?
Exactly.
What will become of Saul now?
Yeah, it's like...
What's going to happen next?
The ultimate plot twist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before we get to Mr. Man After God's Own Heart,
right,
we need to talk about Jonathan.
Oh, yeah.
So the scene is set. Saul and his now diminished army are facing off against the mighty Philistines.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan, Saul's son, steps up with a daring plan.
He does. He decides, along with his armor bearer, to attack a Philistine outpost.
Okay.
Just two guys.
Two guys.
Against a whole enemy garrison.
Wow.
What were they thinking?
I don't know.
Well, their weapon was faith.
Okay.
They truly believed that God was with them. And that was all that mattered.
Okay, but Jonathan doesn't just jump into battle blindly, does he?
No!
I love how he actually asks for a sign from God.
It's such a powerful moment.
Yeah.
He says to his armor bearer, if the Philistines say, come on up and fight, then we know God is on our side.
Oh, I love it. Two guys against an entire Philistine outpost.
Yeah.
But they have something more powerful than weapons.
Right.
Unwavering faith.
Exactly.
And when the Philistines shout, come on up and fight.
Yeah.
It's like God himself is giving them the green light.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And seeing this as the sign from God, Jonathan charges up that cliff.
Oh, wow.
With his armor bearer right behind him. They end up routing a whole bunch of Philistines, causing chaos and panic in the enemy ranks.
Oh, man.
It's a total upset.
So it's like something out of an action movie.
It is.
But here's the thing.
What's that?
Jonathan's victory should have been a cause for celebration, right?
Oh, yeah.
A turning point in the war. But, as we'll see, Saul's actions quickly turned the tide in a completely different direction.
Oh, boy.
So Jonathan pulls off this incredible victory, sparking chaos amongst the Philistines.
Right.
It seems like the tide is turning in Israel's favor.
Yeah.
But then Saul does something, well, let's just say it doesn't exactly scream strategic genius.
Oh, yeah. What does he do?
He makes a vow.
Okay.
Fueled by this, like, intense desire.
Yeah.
To completely crush the Philistines.
Uh-huh.
He declares that anyone who eats before the battle is over will be cursed.
Mm, a curse.
A curse. That sounds serious.
Yeah.
What did that mean for the Israelites?
Yeah, this wasn't just, you know, bad luck we're talking about. It was like a divine judgment. A big no-no in their world.
Yeah.
And this rash vow ends up backfiring. In a big way.
Okay.
The Israeli army, exhausted and hungry from fighting,
yeah,
end up breaking another law by eating meat with the blood still in it.
Ooh.
They were so desperate for sustenance, they didn't even have time to properly prepare the meat according to, you know, their religious customs.
Hold on. So Saul's vow, like, forced them to break another law?
Pretty much.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
Yeah. What's that?
It seems like every time Saul tries to take control, to like force things his way,
right,
it just pushes him further from where he needs to be.
It really highlights this idea, I think, of true obedience versus just going through the motions.
Uh-huh.
Saul is so focused on outward appearances, on the letter of the law, that he completely misses the spirit of it. Oh. He's trying to, like, manipulate God, thinking that he can bargain his way to victory, you know?
And as if things weren't complicated enough.
Right.
There's another twist to the story, right?
Oh, absolutely. Remember Jonathan?
Yeah.
Hero who just single-handedly routed the Philistines?
Yeah, Jonathan.
Well, he missed the memo about the whole no eating thing.
Yeah, I bet he probably had worked up quite an appetite after that battle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he comes across some honey.
Hmm.
And, you know, being a normal human being takes a little snack break.
Okay.
But when Saul finds out about the broken vow, he completely loses it.
Okay.
He is ready to execute someone.
Wow.
Not even realizing it was Jonathan.
Oh, my goodness.
Who had just sparked this amazing victory.
It seems like Saul is so blinded by his rage, by this need to uphold his vow, that he can't even see the good right in front of him.
Yeah.
His own son's heroism.
It's a tragic example of how power and pride can distort our perspective.
Yeah.
It's as if Saul has become so fixated on controlling the situation, on maintaining his authority, that he loses sight of what truly matters.
Yeah.
Justice, mercy, and recognizing the good in others.
So how does Jonathan get out of this mess?
Right.
He's been sentenced to death by his own father.
It takes a dramatic casting of lots to reveal Jonathan as the guilty party.
Okay.
But the Israelite army, recognizing the absurdity of the situation, knowing Jonathan's bravery, they step in to save him.
Wow.
They refuse to let Saul execute the hero.
Wow. It's like a biblical intervention.
Yeah.
The people rising up against a leader who has lost his way.
It's a crucial moment in the story, I think.
Yeah.
It shows that the people aren't blindly following Saul anymore.
Yeah.
They see his flaws, his injustice.
Right.
And they're willing to stand up for what's right, even if it means challenging their king.
It makes you wonder what would have happened if Saul had listen to the people.
Yeah.
If he had acknowledged his mistake, shown some humility, maybe things could have gone differently.
Wait, perhaps. But Saul's story doesn't end here. The consequences of his actions continue to unfold.
Yeah.
In fact, in the very next chapter, we see him making another monumental mistake, this time revealing an even deeper misunderstanding of what it means to truly obey God.
Okay.
But before we get into that,
let's
pause here and consider something for a moment.
Okay.
We've been talking about Saul's mistakes, his disobedience,
But what does it really mean to obey God?
Yeah.
Is it just about following a set of rules?
Right.
Or is there something more to it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we've been exploring the story of King Saul, his triumphs and tragedies,
right,
and how his actions ultimately led to his downfall.
Yeah.
But amidst all this drama,
yeah,
there's another character emerging,
mm-hmm,
a figure who stands in stark contrast to Saul, David.
Yes.
The man after God's own heart.
Uh-huh.
So let's kind of shift gears a little bit.
Okay.
And delve into his story.
It's fascinating how David enters the scene.
Okay.
He's not a powerful warrior or a seasoned leader.
Yeah.
He's a young shepherd.
Okay.
Known for his skill with a sling.
Yeah.
And his talent for music. Not exactly the resume you'd expect for a future king.
It's like something out of a fairy tale.
Yeah.
The shepherd boy who becomes king.
Right.
But what sets David apart from Saul?
Mm-hmm.
What makes him the man after God's own heart?
Well, it all starts with an anointing.
Okay.
Remember Samuel?
Yeah.
The prophet who delivered the devastating news to Saul.
Mm.
God sends him to Bethlehem, to the family of Jesse,
oh,
to anoint a new king.
I can imagine the scene.
Oh, yeah.
Samuel arrives at Jesse's house.
Uh-huh.
Expecting to meet, like, a lineup of strong, imposing sons.
Right.
Each one vying for the throne.
Exactly. Mm. And Jesse presents his sons one by one.
Yeah.
Each one seemingly more impressive than the last.
Okay.
But Samuel keeps saying, nope, not this one.
Wow.
It's almost comical, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can picture Jesse getting more and more flustered as Samuel rejects each son.
Oh, yeah.
And then he remembers, oh, there's one more.
Okay.
The youngest. He's out tending the sheep.
It's like the classic underdog story.
It is.
The one everyone overlooks.
Right.
Turns out to be the chosen one.
Exactly.
But it's not just about David's appearance, is it?
No.
It's about something deeper.
You're right. It's about his heart.
Hmm.
Samuel, guided by God, sees something special in David.
All right.
He's described as a man after God's own heart.
Hmm.
Someone who is humble, obedient,
okay,
and passionate about following God's will.
So David's anointed as the future king.
Uh-huh.
But Saul is still on the throne.
Right.
How does that awkward transition play out?
Well, it's a bit messy, to say the least.
Okay.
David is brought to Saul's court. Remember, he's a talented musician.
Great.
To play music for the king, who is now tormented by an evil spirit.
Okay.
And Saul finds comfort in David's music.
It's like an ancient form of music therapy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then the Philistines attack again, and their champion, Goliath, challenges the Israelites to single combat.
Right.
And this is where David's story really takes off.
Ah, the classic David and Goliath story.
Yes.
Everyone knows that one, the little guy taking on the giant.
Right.
But what makes this story so compelling, even after thousands of years?
It's a powerful reminder, I think, that courage and faith can overcome seemingly impossible odds.
Hmm.
David, armed with just a sling and five stones, steps up to face Goliath.
Yeah.
He's not relying on his own strength or skill,
right,
but on his trust in God's power.
And of course, he wins.
He does.
Slaying the giant and sending the Philistines running.
Yeah.
But this victory doesn't just make David a national hero.
Right.
It sparks a new kind of conflict, doesn't it?
It ignites Saul's jealousy and paranoia.
Mm.
He sees David's popularity as a threat to his own power.
Yeah.
And becomes obsessed with getting rid of him.
So David, even though he's been anointed as the future king,
mm-hmm,
ends up spending years on the run.
He does.
Hiding from Saul.
Yes. And these years are crucial in shaping David's character.
Okay.
He learns about leadership, strategy,
mm-hmm,
the importance of loyalty and trust.
Okay.
He faces dangers and hardships, but through it all,
yeah,
his faith in God doesn't waver.
It's almost like an epic training montage.
It is.
But with real life consequences.
Right.
And through it all, we see those qualities that made him a man after God's own heart.
Mm-hmm.
His humility, his courage, his unwavering faith.
Exactly.
And this is what ultimately sets him apart from Saul.
I think so.
Saul, consumed by pride and fear, loses sight of God's will.
Yeah.
David, even when facing immense pressure,
right,
continues to seek God's guidance.
He learns to wait on God's timing,
mm-hmm,
to trust in God's plan, even when it doesn't make sense.
It's a powerful message for all of us, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Whether we're facing challenges on a global scale or just navigating the ups and downs of everyday life.
It is. The story of Saul and David reminds us,
yeah,
that true leadership, true strength,
comes not from our own power or ambition,
mm-hmm.
but from our willingness to surrender to a power greater than ourselves.
That's good.
It's about trusting that even when we can't see the path ahead,
right,
even when we feel lost and alone,
yeah,
there's a guiding force leading us towards a greater purpose.
And that is our deep dive for today.
It's been a good one.
We journeyed through the rise and fall of King Saul,
mm-hmm.
the unwavering faith of Jonathan,
mm-hmm.
and the emergence of David as the man after God's own heart.
Absolutely.
Story full of drama and intrigue and timeless lessons about leadership, faith, and the struggle between our human desires and divine will.
The classic.
We hope this deep dive has sparked some new insights for you,
mm-hmm.
perhaps even inspire you to reflect on your own journey, your own challenges,
yeah.
and your own relationship with the guiding forces in your life.
Those are good things to ponder.
Thanks for joining us.